Well, welcome to How to Start a Prison Ministry. The workshop is not, it's not going to be a step-by-step process. It's going to be more of the, I think our goal, and it kind of lines up with the Reformed Prison Ministry, is just to share our stories and kind of the stuff that we do. We have three speakers, actually, not just me. I'm going to do a brief introduction of who I am and how I came to Fort Worth Prez, and then basically how the ministry started. And then we'll have Andy Warren, who worked inside of Tarrant County Jail for 16 years and was a jailer. He'll speak about the do's and don'ts and about getting inside and volunteering and what does that look like. And then Susan, who's actually our chairperson now, she's going to speak a little bit about what reentry looks like and some of the challenges that we face when you know, the funny thing is you start praying, you start a prison ministry, people will start knocking on your door because word spreads pretty fast, and the Lord just has a way of sending people that are in need. So let's get started. If you don't mind, I just pray that the Lord be with us and that we'd all be encouraged through something in here. At the end of it, we'll have a time for any Q&A, you know, 10, 15 minutes, maybe some things that your church is already doing. We also will be handing out our policies and our special case felon policy and a program that we have that's real beneficial. So if we could just pray. Father, we're grateful, Lord, for these men and women that are just want to serve you and be merciful and be your hands and feet. We're grateful that that you've redeemed each one of us and that we know that you put this work in front of us, that we should walk in it. We ask that you would just be with us today and just continue to encourage us. Let us just basically stimulate each other to more mercy. Bless this this mercy conference as a whole and then all the work that everyone is doing in Christ's name. So I'm Stephen Smith. I've met a couple of y'all. We met at the General Assembly. Of course, I've met Mark and I've met a little bit everybody else, so. Just real briefly, Reformed Prison Ministry's effort started here at the local grassroots, and it was really driven out of two convicts showing up one day and being met by a Tarrant County jailer and then an ex-Latin king because they didn't want us to make any sudden moves. So they met us at right in front of the office. That's the joke. And you know, it's real interesting is whenever you're inside and you have these dreams, you have visions, you know, you have these desires to come back and actually serve your other brothers and sisters inside and instruct them in the faith and kind of disciple them, you never know what you're going to get on the outside. So we've been really blessed with this congregation as far as the heart that they have for mercy and for the press. So anyway, so two of us show up and we start plugging into the church. And the other guy, he ended up moving out of town. I was in a halfway house at the time. I just got out. Basically, I served right about 5 years for bank robbery. The Lord got a hold of me when I was on the inside. So I didn't know this whole time that somebody had been praying at this church that they would have a prison ministry for at least 5 to 6, 7 years. So it's kind of incidental. I blame Andy for me being incarcerated, even though he didn't arrest me. And I didn't see him at all during my incarceration. I always blame Andy. So it's his fault that I got caught. That's just the way I look at it. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So anyway, so, you know, I was personally just like everyone else. I worked, had a decent job, but I always had one foot in, one foot out of the criminal life. You know, whether it was drugs or selling drugs or, you know, stealing or, you know, different things. You know, people on the outside or people that were church really don't think about the men and women on the inside. You know, a lot of times we just kind of generalize them, and they must be the worst of the worst, or they must, you know, they didn't have good backgrounds, they didn't have had education. And honestly, that's not the case all the time. I was actually raised in this neighborhood. I smoked dope in this in this field when it was a field before it was a church. I've robbed apartment buildings that are just right across the street when I was a teenager. I mean, this was my neighborhood where I grew up, and it was a decent side of town. My dad loved me and cared for me. My mom loved and cared for me. They taught me right and wrong. But as you know, a sinner is going to do what his will is bent towards. So with that being said, I never really sought after Christ on the outside. The Lord had to stop me and really direct me and focus me, because my desire was just like any other sinner. It was money, power, authority, and whatever I want to do. You know, it was a life of autonomy, a life when, you know, where I'm my own law. So I'm inside, I come to the faith, now what? You know, the Lord always has a way of putting good teaching around you. And I was real fortunate because we had the Beaumont PCA Church was actually ministering to a guy inside, Derek Torres, who's now plugged into the Katy Church, who was plugged into Elder Mike and that church, and we had all the Reform resources that we needed. So after, you know, studying and going to the Reform side, of course, we plugged in, and, you know, we had every book that you can imagine. You know, some people joke that really it was a seminary, you know, while you're inside. I would say, in some sense, the reading, yeah, obviously you're not getting, you know, I mean, you're getting great teaching because the Spirit's teaching you, but you're not being challenged, you're not writing a lot of essays. I mean, that part of it's not seminary, but you're definitely reading at a seminary level by the time you get out. So the Lord crushed me inside, brought me to the Reformed faith. I say he crushed me more. Plugged me into a good group. So when I get out, I'm obviously looking for a PCA church, because that's, after much study, I figured that's where I'm at. I'm not Baptist. I'm more Patio Baptist, and that was really Patio Baptism, so that was really more my slant. And lo and behold, there's a Fort Worth PCA church, which is funny, because I show up at the door, and I'd actually written this church several years prior to that, and I never got a response. And that was, you know, but it didn't deter me, because I knew where the Lord wanted me to go personally. I knew which direction and where the Lord wanted me to plant. In other words, where I was supposed to be, what congregation I was going to belong to, regardless of any response. Now, with that being said, of course, that broke the deacon's heart when they heard that. It broke the pastor's heart when he heard that. That wasn't the intention. But it made them stop and think, what do we do when somebody writes? And through, I don't know, a year and a half of just meeting and praying, a ministry started getting formed with some of the guidance of Alan Bonder, who's now on the board of with Metanoia's ministry, helped organize us, brought us for the session, legitimized our ministry, got a small budget so we could start working. And that's really the foundation. That's really how Reformed Prison Ministry started. And our heart comes from Galatians, where he tells us to help everyone in need, especially the household of faith. Well, we believe that the household of faith is also on the inside. It's not just the household of faith out here. Not necessarily those that, very few people are imprisoned for their faith in today's time in America. There's a few, and there's probably going to be more coming up. But right now, most people have committed crimes, and they're inside. The Lord gets a hold of them and crushes them, and they come to the faith. What do we do with those members of our church? Because that's what they are. They're members of the large church. What do we do with them? A lot of churches really don't know. And that's kind of what our premise is how to start a prison ministry. First, you have to have the passion. Second, you have to have the calling. And then third, you have to have a prison close to you, or at least within driving distance, so you can minister to. Those are really it, right there. So that's your how-tos. And the rest of it is the Lord has really blessed this small congregation with many different types of volunteers throughout the years, many different opportunities, whether it's driving to Huntsville, whether it's driving 45 minutes away, whether it's people that are been directed to us from Cornerstone or from other resources. And we've had to respond. And one of our great desires at RPM is that the PC as a whole would be organized in the prison ministry efforts, that there's tons of churches across the nation that are doing things. We now have a national prison ministry of Metanoia through the support of M&A. But what do we do now, right? If we're all doing the same thing over and over again, it kind of slows down the process. So we want to walk through some of those things and some of those challenges that we went through with reentry. What does it look like to get in? And then also what happens when somebody shows on your doorstep? And I don't just mean anybody. I mean a guy that's spent 22 years for chopping up his wife. What do you do with that person when he shows up at your doorstep? How do you serve that person? How do you serve your congregation in the same sense? So that's really kind of our focus. So that's pretty much it about the beginning of RPM. And I want to introduce Andy Warren, and he's going to talk about getting inside and serving. He's probably got probably the most experience other than Mark. Mark's got about the same amount of time inside. So that's all I got. Andy Warren.
All right. Like you said, Andy Warren. I worked with the Tarrant County Sheriff's Office for 16 years. And one of the areas I worked in was always in special housing, people who were on lockdown and everything, and people who were basically the hard-headed people. And one thing I started to notice was whether you're in general population, guys just roaming free, pretty much doing whatever they wanted to do, or if you're in lockdown or if you're in special housing, you had a Bible. Everybody had a Bible in prison, pretty much everybody. If you were a Muslim, of course, you had a Quran. If you were other faiths, you had books of other faith. But one of the things I started to notice shortly into my career is jails and prisons in the United States are some of the most religious places that you can go and be in because of the teaching, you know, reading at a seminary level. I know Mark's testimony, he had books, you know, unlimited amount of books pretty much sent in by a donor. Steve's reading, you know, how many people wait until they get to seminary before they read the institutes? You know, Calvin's Institutes, you have guys first, second year into prison reading barely at a sixth grade level, reading and understanding Calvin's Institutes. You know, there's a lot of learning that goes on, and there's other reading too that, you know, we probably wouldn't endorse or anything like that, but there's just a lot of area of growth in prison ministry. And because of the need, because, you know, the state of Texas puts a Bible in everybody's hand. You go to prison in the state of Texas, you're going to be handed a Bible. So religion's very important. What type of religion are they going to learn when they're in there? A lot of the religion they learn when they're in there is what I get when I sit down and read my Bible. There's no instruction. As I seen this happening, I began to pray that our church would somehow become involved in prison ministry. I said, there's all this learning going on and very little teaching. And I said, how can we get, because the PCA says we have the theology, we have the right teaching, you know, we hold to historical Christianity and historical teaching. How do you get that inside the prison? Well, for 5 years, I pretty much continued to do my job, started praying for the inmates, which was really odd because it really affected my relationship with them and how I dealt with them. I talked to them about their faith, and I learned a lot that guys really would adhere to your typical jailhouse religion. As long as I'm in here, my faith is strong, it's good. When I get out, there's no faith, it falls to the side. You know, maybe my prayer didn't take when I said my prayer. So over a period of time, about 5 years, everything finally came together at the church where we had someone, Alan, who could organize us. We talked to the elders and the deacons, and they brought us all together, and we started to form Reform Prison Ministry. It wasn't easy, and sometimes I feel like prison ministry is one of the hardest sells that you have as far as a ministry, and we have plenty of people doing it in Tarrant County. But it's very difficult. You get into a setting like we have, a lot of people don't have a lot of experience inside of a prison. They really don't know what goes on in prison. They watch movies, TV. But I'm here to tell you that going to prison is as easy as becoming a volunteer. And some of the do's and don'ts of it, the first thing that we did that we did as a group was pray. We prayed, like Steve said, for at least a year before we really even started to formalize anything. We had people, we had Ed Neville went into the Tarrant County Jail for 15 years, and he was a member of this church, and nobody really knew what he was doing. Very few people knew that he was going in 15 years plus and ministering at the jail downtown. He kind of kept it to himself. I happened to be doing a catwalk, walk in the jail where I was checking on the inmates on the night the volunteers were in there, and I seen him. And he was in one of our worst areas of the jail ministering through the bars to a group of inmates. And I was shocked. I said, I know that guy. He goes to my church. And so I finished my walk, and the next Tuesday that the volunteers came in, I made sure I had a little extra time to stop and talk to him and learn that he'd just been doing it on the fly for 15 years. And there was, he, I don't know why he didn't involve anybody, but there was hardly any involvement from the church. And I was like, how can we get the church involved? Why is he the only one coming down here? One thing I learned from law enforcement is it's better to go in twos. You always got to have a partner when you go and do something. It's very important. I said, you know, that's the same way that prison ministry needs to be done. It needs to be done in twos. So from me praying in the jail to Ed going into the jail, him praying, and then other guys came together and prayed. We had weekly and monthly prayer meetings, and we finally started to form. First thing we did was choose a leader. This is a do. Do pray and follow the lead. A lot of our lead came from a group effort. We had guys that had been in and incarcerated, and we had guys that had worked in law enforcement, and we had guys that had already been going in and ministering. And basically, you follow their lead. There's a lot of, I like to say, law and gospel involved in prison ministry, but it's the law of the land. You have to adhere to the law, but faith has a lot to do with that. And one of the things we're doing in this church is we have special case felons. We've been dealing with a lot of the most undesirable people that do come from the prison setting, sex offenders. We have guys with aggravated assaults, you know, aggravated sexual assaults. Guys that have come through the church that have been murderers. You know, how do you deal with that? Because one of the problems is the congregation, it's not a problem. It's just everybody tags everything as jailhouse religion. So we relied on the guys who have been in. We relied on the guys involved in law enforcement to come up with policies and guidelines. And a lot of them are state guidelines. A lot of them came from the safety classes that you get as you go to safety classes to become a volunteer. So if you have someone involved in your church in prison ministry, find out who they are, talk to them, pick their brain. If you have someone that's involved in law enforcement, try to get them, talk to them, pick their brain, and especially if you've had somebody that's incarcerated. You'll learn a lot about the culture of prison talking to someone that has been incarcerated, and it's a completely different culture than outside. So those are three things that you need to do, is follow the lead of someone else and start working together as a team, because somebody's going to have, they're going to know the laws, they're going to know the how to deal with the culture, and they're going to know how to teach or minister. And foster the team concept, that is a do. As you foster the team concept and you start identifying where people can take the lead, the people who've been involved in law enforcement, have been incarcerated, and doing various things, let them, allow them to let their individual ministry gel, because at any given time, we have someone going into any number of units, going into different units, doing different things. We have guys working in faith-based dorms. We have had guys going down to Huntsville and teaching individual classes. We've had guys going in and preaching at the chapel level, you know, the chaplaincy on Sunday mornings. And it's very important to foster each of those gifts that someone has if you're going to go on the inside. And there's plenty of opportunities in the state of Texas. And I was talking to some guys in Missouri. They said Missouri sounds a lot like Texas in that they want to go to faith-based practices and a faith-based construct in their prison system because it keeps recidivism rates down. So follow the lead, foster the team concept, everybody's not going to be able to do the same thing at the same time. And if someone comes in and maybe they want to work in reentry, that's fine. Let them work in reentry. Not everybody in prison ministry can be get the same stamp on them. And I'm going to kind of go over some different levels of how you can be involved in prison ministry, from being a special volunteer to a approved volunteer to not even going through any state training at all because of the state restrictions, especially in the state of Texas. Another do, as you're building your team and you're letting people find out where they're going to minister, is work with the leaders in your church. We would not be where we're at if it hadn't have been for the elders seeing our vision, listening to us, and guiding us in how to get the ministry started. And one of the things, we've had some other things happen in the ministry, but as long as you stay under the leadership and the umbrella of the church, and the leadership is here for a reason, your ministry will, it'll grow, and especially when the leadership starts to foster that growth and everything. You're an elder, Mark, and Steve's a deacon. Are there any other elders and deacons in here? Elder, deacon, teaching elder, deacon. If someone comes to you in your church and they really want to start a prison ministry, help foster that growth. And we had to, I'm not necessarily a writer or a public speaker or anything like that, but we identified guys that could do that and could help us get that started, and they could take what you said, put it into words, and before you know it, we're starting to get organized. So, and as far as any ministry goes in your church, and it's a viable ministry, let it organize under your church. And that's really how our grassroots started. I mean, we just, as a group of loosely knit people, you know, the first time I met him, my first question, I think this is not a lie, it's as best as I can remember, is, what do you want from us? Isn't that pretty close to how it went? Pretty much, what are you doing here and what do you want from us? Okay, gee, that was a real good way to greet somebody that I'd been praying to meet for the past 5 years. And then what was the second thing that I said to you? I've been praying to meet you for the past 5 years. I'm so glad you're here. And then he was kind of like, oh, okay. And literally, I'd been praying for a catalyst to come in and help kickstart a prison ministry. And it took someone, Norberto, and two ex-convicts to come in and round out the team. Don't exclude anybody from the team based on their past history. They didn't hold me back because I'd been, quote-unquote, a turnkey. I worked in the law enforcement system, and I certainly drew from their experiences on the inside. So that's why it's important when you're building your team to let people settle and get into the ministry that they need to do. But work with the leaders in your church. If you're not a leader, figure out how that's done. Figure out how the session works, how to talk to the deacons, how to try to get a budget, a meeting space, and how you can do that. And if you're one of the elders, allow that to happen and foster that and let it happen, because we certainly got a great amount of support. And plus, it helps when the preacher's teaching about service. And you stand up and you say, hey, we're ready to get in the game, and this is what we're going to do. It's going to be hard for him to put us back on the bench. You know, he's preaching, get up and go do. Okay, well, here's some guys that are ready to go and do it. I'm sorry it's not your preferred ministry. It's prison ministry, and it's going to be tough, and we're going to have some people come through that are probably not who you really want to see, but this is where God's calling us, and our leaders were very encouraging in that and letting us going out and do our calling and ministering. Understand, the work in prison is not easy. Prison is difficult. If you've been in prison and you were there for any length of time, you know that prison's not an easy place to be. If you've worked in a prison, you know it can be tough. You can have guys that have the jailhouse religion. They have that experience. So understand that working in prison means that you may end up working with people who are just released. And my do is proceed with caution, more prayer, and training. Proceeding with caution is, what are the right questions to ask that person? Not necessarily what are you doing here, But we have an interview process with our elders. We have a group of elders and deacons, and we'll when we have a guy come in, especially a special case felon, which are sex offenders, like I said, or someone that's been involved in some sort of aggravated felony, they sit down and they get questioned by the elders, and someone from the prison team will sit in, generally the chairperson, i.e. chairman, but they will sit in, and there's an interview process. You have to interview the person with caution. You can't really be offensive, but you really have to ask the hard questions. A lot of the questions I ask were, did you plead down your case? Did you go to prison for the crime you were actually accused of? Were you convicted of the crime you're accused of? In the state of Texas, you can plea bargain. You can take a lesser crime. It's very important if you're dealing with, well, I'll use a DWI felony, for example. If you have a DWI felony repetition, you spend a lot of money, get a good lawyer, you can plea that down to a public intoxication. So you can take something that's a felony, which will ruin the rest of your life, and plea it down to something that's basically a ticket. That costs a lot of money to do in the state of Texas, but it has been done. People have pled down their case. Now you take a case, you have someone that may have committed a sexual offense. He knows he's looking at 60 plus years, and he pleads down and takes, and he would have been convicted of it too, but he takes a lesser plea. Tough questions. You know, nobody wants to sit and talk down to some, or talk to somebody and ask them questions about what their crime was. And generally, my biggest don't when I do question somebody, I don't ask for the details. I just ask a simple, did you do it? And then I see where they come from. You have to proceed with caution when you're doing that, because some of the legalities with the feds and the and state laws, how they're written. But you have to proceed with caution and prayer and training. And the state of Texas is real good about training. We're actually trying to get some training together for special case felons. And we do our... we have training for chaperones. When someone comes into the church, they just, you know, especially a special case felon, they just don't come in and start worshiping in the church. They've been interviewed by the elders. The deacons have spoken to them. Someone on the prison ministry team knows who they are, and then they get assigned a chaperone. So when that person comes to church, they are met at the door, or they meet in the library, and they sit with an individual, and that individual goes with them everywhere they go. And another confession of mine, I was pretty sure that we weren't going to do, as long as I was involved in the ministry, we weren't going to have a special case felons situation, because I already knew we weren't going to deal with this type of person. We weren't going to deal with this type of person. Guess who the first person who called me was, who wanted to come to church and be involved in our church? It was a special case felon. He'd been released from the state of Texas. He was looking at basically doing a long time in prison. He served enough time that they let him out with an ankle monitor and a satellite monitor. And he was a sex offender. It had to deal with people under the age of 18. And it was a very hard case. That's the first person other than Steve and I think the other guy's name was Richard who came to the church wanting our help to reintegrate back into society. And that was a very tough go, because we were challenged by a lot of the people in the congregation prior to that individual getting here. And I pretty much already said, we're not going to have anybody here that's going to be categorized that high, you know, as far as crimes go. And lo and behold, it's the first person that shows up. And that was the basis of a lot of our policy and procedure and our special case felon policies that we wrote. But anyways, he's actually managing a restaurant here in Fort Worth now and doing real well. Here's a couple of don'ts. Don't think that the ministry stops behind the wire. It's only the beginning. They do get out. Our class in Ellis, we had two people get out of our class at Ellis. One actually was in Ellis, Josiah Luttrell. He came up here to Sanders Estes for a little bit. He's living in Dallas. Another guy actually got out, ended up going back to Victoria. Everybody else out of the 15 to 20 guys that regularly showed up for a class were doing at least a double life sentence. So we weren't too concerned about them getting out, but people do get out of prison. One of my goals and one of my dues is deal with the people that you've dealt with in prison. If you start a class in prison, if you're going to minister in there, those are the guys that you want to try to reconnect with when you get out, because hopefully you've already known them for a year, you know their testimony, and you know a little bit about them and what they want to accomplish when they get out. The hardest person to connect with is the guy that comes to your doorstep who you have no prior relationship with. So really the best thing to do is to have a relationship with the people that you've already had a relationship with on the inside. Sometimes that will be possible. They will only be doing a few years. Sometimes it will be next to impossible because of the length of time that they're going to be serving in prison. My second do and don't before I get into how I try to categorize people going in. But anyways, don't be overwhelmed and don't allow yourself to become overwhelmed. Set limits on the extent of your ministry. You can only accomplish so much and you will not save the world. You may have to ask hard questions and listen to heartbreaking answers. You might get taken advantage of. You might have to rely on your faith more than ever as you fight the mistrust of jailhouse religion and try to discern if a person's profession of faith is going to lead to their desire to live the gospel. And really, that is our whole reason for ministry, is we're trying to live out the gospel as we feel Christ has called us to minister. You can pick one of these up. It's real easy. It's just a little trifold. But I've identified three areas, especially in the state of Texas. You can go as a special volunteer, where you go in. You can go in up to five times without any special training. That's for someone that just wants to go in. You can be a worship leader. You can teach classes, and you can mentor. So all under a special volunteer, you can teach a class. You can preach, you can mentor, you can go in as a TDCJ approved volunteer. It's where you go set through a 1-day training course and you have more access in the facility. That's what I would recommend that the bulk of people in your ministry do, is go get trained so they can actually go on the inside and start ministering on the inside. That way you can do it on a weekly basis. You're not limited. You can have weekly scheduled classes. You can go in every Sunday and preach in their church. You can become a certified volunteer chaplain assistant in the state of Texas. Once you get 40 hours of volunteer work, you can go in. It might be more, but you can go in for another 40-hour class where you actually start to handle other volunteers, schedule other volunteers. You're kind of an extension of the chaplain. Adrian Scott, one of our elders, just went through that training. He's now a CVCA, so he's going to have a lot more access to the unit that he goes to. Someone who gets trained is a regular active volunteer, a weekly basis. And then I recommend, if you're going to do reentry, you have people who don't go through any state training at all, but they have to be trained somehow. Because in the state of Texas, if you're a trained volunteer, they limit the access you can have when an inmate gets out of prison. So you want to have people in your church that are able to minister to those people without having any state restrictions. So we may have, Steve will be a special volunteer. I might be a trained TDCJ approved volunteer, and Susan may not receive any state training at all under TDCJ training, so she can jump through the hoop of having someone come to the church, helping them. There's one other thing, mentoring. Mentoring's become a vital part in the state of Texas. You can actually contact, make different contacts for the inmate while they're still on the inside. So I think that's kind of a nutshell. I don't know if I covered my amount of time, but do's, just pray. Follow the lead of those people who have experience. Foster the team concept. When everything gets shaken up, everybody will come down in a place of service and know where you're going to serve if you plan on doing prison. Understand that prison ministry is difficult. Understand that guys coming out, guys and gals, will get out of prison. Don't think the ministry stops behind the wire, and be ready and willing to ask the hard questions to keep your congregation safe, because they're going to be looking to you to vet these guys coming in. And then just understand that the state of Texas is putting a Bible in everybody's hand, and faith-based practices, it works. It reduces recidivism, and that's what the state wants, because they're tired of spending money on the prison system. And with that being said, I know it was kind of quick, but I'm going to turn the floor over to Susan.
Yeah, so what do you do? So now you're inside, you're at the jail level, you're at the prison level, which is either state or it's federal. And every one of them has different guidelines. Every one of them have different ways to get certified. Some are stricter than the other ones. So now you've done that. You're going inside, or you started making contact. Somebody shows up at your door. What's your end goal is the question that you have to ask. What's your end goal for an ex-inmate that's come to the faith, that's been broken, male or female, doesn't matter, no church background. Their only church background they have is 7 years, 8 years, 10 years, 19 years inside. So they know one style of worship. They've read the Bible, I guarantee you, more than any teaching elder you ever met. And I guarantee you, if they've had good resources, they've read everything that you've read twice to three times over. Who speaks the language, who understands the faith, who can recite and probably has memorized books of the Bible. What do you do when that person shows up? What's the end goal? Right? We always say, you use fancy terms like to reintegrate them back into society, into the family, and into the church. Right? That's part of our vision statement, our mission statement, which is almost identical to prison fellowship, which is interesting, because every prison ministry is the same. They have three faucets. So what do you do? What's the end goal? Well, we have a couple examples in the room what the end goal is, right? But these are not always what the end goal is for that individual. Mark, who did time inside, a lot of time inside, is a ruling elder, right? Now of two different congregations. So it's not just one congregation that's kind of blessed him. It's another congregation as well. I came in, I plugged into the church, and I would say that's more the testimony. Plugged into the church, I served alongside people, didn't carry a chip on my shoulder. I loved on everybody, and people warmed up. They realized, like, hey, he's just a guy that loves Jesus. I married into the church, one of the longstanding families of the church. I just had my fifth kid with Rebecca. So I think that's the end goal. That's truly helping somebody reintegrate in society, is just accept them as Christians. Accept them as a person that's been redeemed, regardless if it's an ex-convict or whether it's a person that came from the apartment that has a drug addiction problem. It's really the same. It's just a sinner. So I think the end goal for somebody getting out of prison and the reentry is that they plug in and they become a vital member of your church. Not a member that's always in need financially. They might have different spiritual needs, but a vital member of your church, and that's allowed to plug in, that's not looked at differently, that does everything anyone else wants to do and probably even more because they're zealous. They've been trapped up, ready to go. So keep that in mind as Susan, I'm going to turn it over to Susan now. She's going to talk about reentry, some of the challenges that she knows she's faced. And she's just a newly appointed chairperson. We've had three different chairs, myself, Andy, and Alan, for the RPM. And then so Susan is now the fourth chairperson, which is great. That's what you want from your ministry. If you're doing it all yourself and you're the only driving force, is it really a ministry if no one else is plugging in and able to take over leadership? But Susan is, this is her first speaking engagement. Not that me and Andy are like all that smooth, but hopefully she'll win over the day. And then when she finishes up, we'll do some Q&A. You got it? Just strap it on. There you go.
Okay, good to go. I'll start out with just a little bit about me first. I have been incarcerated. I was there for about 2.5 years. And the problem that I wanted to touch on first is women's ministry, women's prisons. The men, and when I first came to this church, it seems all of the men's prisons or the county jails have plenty of men willing to go in, but the women's seem to be lacking. And that was just one thing I wanted to reiterate first, was to try to get the women involved in your ministry, or try to get involved in a women's prison and get someone in there, because it is becoming more and more, the women's prisons are growing. And so that needs to be addressed quickly, to me, before it becomes that there's just nothing there. And I found while I was there that there are a lot of what I call everything's going to be perfect as long as you pray ministries. You're going to come out, and as long as you have found faith, you're going to have everything you need once you get home. You're going to become wealthy. You're going to, you know, everything is taught except, you know, the truth of what you're going to be facing when you get home. And a lot of times you come home and there's no one there. There's no one to go to. And I was very, very blessed. And when I came home, I was given the name of this church. That's all I knew. And the hard part is it's up to the newly released person to make contact. And that's if you have teaching while you're inside, if you have confidence in people that have come in and taught, whether it be from the church you're going to or somewhere else, you are more likely to reach out when you do come home. If you haven't had that, it's very difficult to go in to a church and say, I'm here, you know, accept me. You can't, it's just very hard to do that if you haven't had someone on the inside helping you along. I grew up in the church until I was maybe 10 years old. After that, I don't think I ever walked in again. And once I was arrested, you find out there's just not anyone else that you can rely on. You're out there, and if you reach out, God is there. If, you know, you have that choice of reaching out, and you need guidance. That's the main thing. If you don't have that while you're there, someone to help you, you have all the reading, you have all of the books, but if you don't have someone that is a true person that stands there beside you, it's very difficult when you come home. As I said, I was very blessed in this church. I called Alan Bondurant, Steve Smith. They had me come up here, and, you know, I didn't know what to expect. But I was welcomed. Just, it was amazing to be able to walk in here and have people say, can we help you? Sit down, we'll pray. Whatever you need, we're here. And that's something I would like to see in every church out there, is that, you know, we don't come home to one area. You know, if we're imprisoned here, we don't come home here. We're stationed all over the United States in different prisons, whether it's federal. You can be in New York. I was in Galveston. I grew up in Fort Worth. So there have to be places all over the state for people to come home. And I want to see that there's a welcoming place for people who are seeking it out. That being said, we'll go to reentry. It's something that doesn't cost anything. That's the main thing. When you're setting up a prison ministry, I know there needs to be a budget, but it doesn't cost anything to welcome somebody in the door. And a lot of times people worry about the cost of starting a prison ministry, whether you start on the inside or on once the newly released, you can do it with no or little budget. And that's, it just takes the people stepping in, and if you are here, and taking charge, seeking out people to help you, asking for volunteers. And sometimes it's only one or two people within the church, but if you welcome one person home, those two people, that's enough. That's enough. There's a lot of apprehension amongst members for people coming home. It's hard to get women, especially, to help with the prison ministry. I'm finding that out myself. It's very hard to get someone to volunteer to go in. But there's other things, men or women, that they can do that don't require going in. Once people come out, they need transportation. They need housing, assistance with just sometimes grocery shopping. If someone's been in for a number of years, they don't even know how to use a cell phone, the computer. There are a lot of resources out there, but how do they get there? Or how do they find out about them? The list that I got when I came home was so outdated. None of the things that were on it, or very few, were actually still there. So if you have people within your ministry that are willing to get online, get some contacts, get information about where the driver's license place is, where, I know, Cornerstone Ministries, get information for them. It doesn't require you going in. It's something that someone can do, not have to be afraid, and it kind of gets them in the door to where they're a little more comfortable. Well, this wasn't so bad. You know, nobody came after me, nobody hurt me, and I could do this, and it's part of the ministry. You need people on the backside, not just going in, for it to run smoothly. I know if it wasn't for someone coming and taking me to the doctor, I've never ridden a bus. I didn't know how to look at a bus schedule. I was very literate in the computer and different things like that, but how many people come home and have a laptop? You know, so you need people to do those things, and they can do them in the background and step in. And if you're not comfortable, I give you the information. You can use it to help this person. Maybe I'm still a little apprehensive to get in, you know, get up there and step out and do that. I know I had a couple of ladies here at the church, and they would just take me for coffee or tea, set it, you know, in one of the little coffee shops, visit with me for a little while, take me back home. And that meant more than anything. You know, it got the I'm not worth it, nobody cares. It got kind of rid of that, and it's a very hard thing to deal with when you come home. And to have people step out and do that was just a blessing, because, you know, what else would you do? And then talk about that word. You know, if you don't have anyone there, you have no resources, you don't have the people willing to step up and just say hello, the chances that you're going to go back to the old ways are very high. So I'm a firm believer. I know what they've done as far as going in, but when you come home, you're back in society, and you have a chance to live what you've learned, or what you've, that little bit of faith that you've gained. If you have someone that's demonstrating it, it's a lot easier to continue on that same path. And that's, to me, very, just something that's made a world of difference. And I can see some of the people that have come into the church and that we've at least talked to, welcomed. You see the difference that makes. Some of the things we're running into, I know Andy touched on it, is the special case felons. We're writing trying to go over some general guidelines right now as far as a lot of the special case felons are going to be on parole for the rest of their life, or 10 years, or different, you know, different times. But what do you do when they come off of parole? When they're on parole, they have counselors and parole officers they have to report to. So once they come off parole and they don't have these rules from the state to follow anymore, as a church, what rules are we going to set that we still need to follow? We have a certain areas, for instance, for children's areas that some of the offenders cannot go into. They have to have a chaperone. How long are we going to keep that chaperone in place? Those are some of the things that we're looking at now that we're very unsure of as to setting some guidelines on time limits, areas that they're going to go into. And that's something probably you need to look into your church if you do allow any type of special case felons, is to get those guidelines in place beforehand, to where we have, we're getting phone calls every day now because there's not many churches that do allow special case felons. So word gets around really quick, that this is where you call if you want to go when you come home. And so all of a sudden we're getting calls. And as he said, I'm new. We're getting the calls. And thank goodness for Adrian Scott, because I wouldn't know what to do. How do you, you know, get enough chaperones to be with the offenders when they come into the church? So we're having to scramble at the moment to get enough chaperone training, get enough, you know, volunteers. You don't want to burn out your volunteers to where you have one or two, they're having to do everything every week, and you burn them out really quick. So we're trying to get at least enough volunteers that you go once or twice a month instead of every week. Two people every week, you try to get one that alternates, something like that. And that's something to look at, is not overextend without having your training and your volunteers in place first before you step out. We'd open the doors, and like I said, now it's scrambling to get all the procedures and policies in place as to the limits of what we can and can't do. And there's got to be a limit as to how many people we can allow into the church and have enough chaperones to do that. So those are things to look at, you know, ahead of time, instead of waiting and then getting the phone calls and not being able to accept someone into your church because you don't have enough volunteers or chaperones. And we haven't had to say no yet, as far as I know, but I know it's coming. And that's going to be hard for me to do, is to tell someone, no, you can't come at this time. So that's just one of the things that I'm looking at now. The other one, I was talking about volunteers that are apprehensive about going into the prison. We have, as I said, transportation, but they need to find housing. If you don't have anywhere to stay, how are you going to get to church? How are you going to get home? Some of the areas that we have around here don't have bus systems. I know Benbrook and different things like that because I've tried to find it for my son. But if you don't have a bus, then you do rely on the congregation to pick you up and bring you. You rely on someone to meet you at the parking lot or at the door, because you can't come in unless you have a chaperone. And so that has kind of been a problem that we've had right now as far as getting everything into place. But do write or call another church, call here for someone that's already ran into some of the problems, and just talk to us. I would be more than willing, I'm sure anyone else, to answer questions so that other churches, they don't go through the same thing that we've already been through and have an answer for. And I find that a lot in different things, of everyone starting and running against walls that other churches have already dealt with or already have a solution to. So reaching out to me is one of the most important things you can do, whether it's, you know, the ministry or when you come home. It's one of the hardest things a lot of people have to do, is reaching out and asking for help. And I recommend that for this as well as anything else. Andy touched on the the training sessions that you can do. I'm going to switch to going on the inside a little bit. The same ones, I was not even aware until he said it, that you can have limited contact if you've been inside and you've been through the training. I wasn't aware of that. And so that's something I'm going to have to look at. I'm still what they call on paper. I can't go into the prisons. So I concentrate my efforts on the administrative side and the reentry side. In another year and a half, I'll have to look at that end. But I don't know that I would want to do that if I can't continue doing the reentry once I did it. So I'm going to have to rethink that process now as to, I want to be here praying for everyone on the inside, of course, but I'll want to be here to help them once they come home. And it's very hard. I've looked at both sides, and I don't see how you can start doing everything at one time. To me, it would have to be in pieces. You have to pick whether it's going to be going on the inside or you're going to start out with reentry. And then they're both going to merge eventually, because some of the people that you've gone in to see are going to be there, you know, wanting a place to come home. But to step out and do it all at one time would be very difficult. I would recommend starting with one end of it to begin with, for the training and everything like that. Women, as I said before, are very apprehensive more than men. I found that. And we have one person that came home, that came through our church and has been here, who got food but is in a transitional housing. Their food's taken, or they don't have the facilities to cook or fix their meals. So the women are fixing meals. I mean, taking them to them. I wasn't aware that there were so many opportunities to serve that didn't require even actually knowing who the offender was that was attending your church at the time. And they're out there. And to let your congregation and let your women and men know that there are places you can serve that do not require you going into the prison or being afraid. And there's just many of them out there that you can use. We also have our meetings, to where we haven't had them in a while. It's kind of with the transition. We would meet once a month for prayer, just nothing but prayer. We meet once a month for our general meeting to go over everything that we're working on, get reports from the units. We set it up just like a regular committee board meeting and report to the session, to the Mercy Committee, on what we're doing, what we want to do, and how things are going. I can't tell you how apprehensive I was as to even attending the first meetings. And I was from the inside, and I was still apprehensive. I thought, oh, there's people going to be, you know, worse than me. I don't know that I can do this. And even after being so touched by the Lord and feeling that I was so blessed, I still had an apprehension about other people. So I can imagine someone that's never even been around someone. I had never even been around someone that had been to jail. And so I was in a different category. And it sure changed my mind real quick, as that I'm no different than anyone else. And if you have been saved and you are here asking for help, then I need to reach out to you. And that's just what I feel like everyone within a congregation who believes that we are here to serve should be able to do. But it's very hard. And that's one of the biggest things that I'm running into now, is that finding volunteers, finding actual people to step up and do that is very hard. If it wasn't for these two guys right here, I don't know what I would do. I call them on every week and say, what do I need to do here? Or tell me what to do there. And so you do need those people that step in there and lead and guide from the beginning. And then step back and let other ones, train the other ones. We were looking at something along the lines of the board having a two-year term. 1 year that you're there, and 1 year you mentor someone that's under you. Then you, after your 2 years, you step down, and the one that's been the one-year mentor step up, so that you don't get burnt out, number one, and you always have someone that knows what's going on. You're training, you don't come in and step in and not know what's going on. So that's another thing that you can look at when you're setting up your guidelines and your just your forming how you want to run the actual prison, the ministry, and the administrative part, is to get those things in place before you step out there and just jump in with both feet. It's very, very hard. But that's it. I have no idea what time it is. Are we?
Or,
all right. You're welcome. Don't let me walk up.
See, she's better than us, wasn't she?
No.
More organized. Yeah, so you can see there's a lot of different faucets that we, or faces that we have, you know, that we deal with within prison ministry. I was talking to a gentleman from Las Vegas today, Greg, and they actually have a deacon that came out of their prison ministry they had several years ago that's kind of faded away. And he's like, you know, but it, right now he's in the process of dealing with an SO, a special case felon in a sense, but no one else is doing anything inside. And he's like, you know, I've been really convicted, like, this used to be like our thing, the prison ministry, and it's kind of faded out. So with that being said, I mean, you see kind of sometimes it transitions a little bit. The focus, the main focus, may transition, and that's something, please don't be afraid of that, because that's just the Lord saying, hey, this is what you're going to be doing right now. You know, me and Andy, we had a hard time with that because we're not big reentry guys. I don't know why. I think we just, you know, we know how tough it is. I think that's what it is. We were scared of it. So take Susan and Adrian to step up and challenge us a little bit. Yeah, so that's kind of Reformed Prison Ministry. We have some handouts. Right now it's kind of open forum. If you want to stay and hang out and you got some questions, or you got some encouragement or something that you're doing in your church, now's the time to kind of ask them, or if you have anything in particular that you want to ask. Anybody? Mark? Ah, come on, Mark.
I've got a couple questions.
Yeah.
Why do you think there are so women going in to minister to women? Like, my experience in women's prisons has been that there's 100 people going in the men's, they're lining up to go into men's prison to ministry, but on the women's side, there are not. Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is, in society, we still don't realize that there are women, that there's a need, that there's, it's just a couple of little small places, maybe, in the state of Texas, that have women. There, women don't do bad things. Not many women do. And I think people aren't aware that the women's prisons in Texas are overflowing. There's many. There's, it's just a huge thing. And I just don't think people have really accepted that is a fact. I think men and women are viewed differently. And, you know, you expect men to do something wrong, but women don't.
And if they do, you think they're really screwed up, right?
Yeah, something well, wrong something happened.
Right, yeah. So, no, true, yeah. Yeah. It's all the man's fault. It's like it's Eve's fault.
I don't realize that there are as many women in prison as there are. The other thing is apprehension. If there's a woman in prison, it must be really bad. So what woman on the outside is wanting to go in there? It's scary. I would not have done it. I wouldn't. When I was all about me before, God put me where I needed to be. Let me put it that way. Because I would never be a believer. Well, I'm not going to say I never would be. I wouldn't be have the heart that I do now had I not gone to prison. I don't know what would have happened, but I've seen so many people that were in prison. They would be dead, or, you know, and really, truthfully, I was dead on the inside. I really was. And it put me where I needed to be.
Geographically, in the state of Texas, the women's units are not an easily accessible area. You have to really travel to get to them because of where they're placed. And women right now are the fastest growing demographic in the system.
But I think it's fear. I really do. I think it's fear. And then a lot of men, you know, it's a very, for men to go into the prison, there's so many opportunities for things to go wrong. And having that fear of being in there, you know, with these women or something to go wrong, I think that's another thing that is a deterrent.
Well, it's interesting because I found women who will go and minister in women in men's facilities, mm-hmm. and then when I suggest, hey, 20 minutes away is a women's facility, you want to go in there, I get looked like I've just called them the worst name in the world. I mean, why would I want to do that?
I'm not going to speak for other people, but for me, I just can't imagine women in prison. It must be really bad. It's really bad if they're there, because women just don't go to prison.
I think we're running out of time. Can I ask
you? Absolutely. Yeah.
Our church is at the very early stages of the prayer stage. We're
okay.
just thinking about
right.
it. I don't even understand, in terms of the inside stuff, what's the difference between a county jail, city jail, prison? Mm-hmm. Do you have prison ministries in all of those?
Yeah.
Helpful to have one in a city jail?
Yeah, I was thinking I'd take a couple minutes to kind of explain some of the lingo. Like, we're saying special case felons. In our case, we've labeled that not only sex offenses, which are SOs. It's the easier way. I got it, Andy. So we would say, I'm leading to it. So we have SOs, and then you also have, it could be a violent offender for just been locked up for 20 years that might just need a little guidance. That's part of that lingo. And then we're talking about state jail, federal prisons, state prisons. You have a two-year prison, which is called state jail, which they're there for 2 years. Jail would be considered any of your local jails, like Tarrant County, county jail, right? It's a county jail. Right, you have a city jail. And typically in county jail, you corrected me wrong, officer, if it's under 2 years, you cannot be sentenced and be in a county jail longer than 2 years. I think by you have to catch your chain by the 2 year mark. Typically, there's no long term sentences.
No, because it really depends on your trial date. You can be in the
right. I mean, you
jail
could
for years and years and years
until your trial.
Guys that, you know, spend 6 years there. It just depends.
But once you're convicted, is what I'm talking about.
Once you're convicted, you have a certain amount of time, unless the state kicks it back on the county.
Right.
If the state
okay.
can't do that, they start paying for the bed.
So county jails are typically bigger. It's kind of like Tarrant County. You have Dallas, right? Dallas. You have Dawson, which is a state jail, actually. Which is. Yeah. Then you have your local city jails, which might be like smaller cities, which they. It could be like, let's say, like Dalworthington Gardens. Let's say, like. You're going to go to city jail. Yeah. Right. But you. Yeah, there's jail ministries. Yeah. Yeah, you could. Now, the thing about jail ministry, it is a lot different. You're usually kind of more focused on catching guys as they're catching their time. But what you see in city jails, it's harder to build those relationships because of the turnaround. Because you're dealing with speeding ticket guys, you're dealing with child support guys, you're dealing with guys that are about to catch their time. Yeah, and they bail out and they show up and their needs are a lot different. So our focus has always been kind of more of, I think Andy or Alan kind of kickstarted in a county jail, just kind of get used to being around, I think that was kind of his focus. But our focus has always been more prison ministry, because the opportunities to build long-term relationships and to actually make an impact in over a period of time and see fruit from that is a lot different.
You do have to travel a distance.
Well, we drive 45 minutes is the furthest, or the closest, Sanders Estes, which is in Venus, just outside of Burleson. We drove for several years down to Huntsville, because that's to Texas. If you're going to do, I mean, that's where a lot of it is. You have Polensky. I mean, you have different units are closer. A lot of it just is kind of where you're led. Jail ministry is it's a vital part of any prison ministry. I mean, I think it's vital to catching those believers before they're sent up and also before they're released. I mean, you could get some probably really decent congregational members that are, like I said, there for drunk driving and have good jobs and already have they have a family that's just broken. You know, that's a different kind of ministry, and it's going to be quicker because you're going to see them within a month. You're going to see them within 2 months. Go ahead, Mark.
I would just say the difference for me is that jail ministry is not a crisis ministry. You are plucked out of society, you're thrown in this jail, your life is gone, so you're writing for the gospel. Or maybe you're a Christian and you just, wow, my wife's going to kill me, my church is going to exit me. That type of crisis. Prison ministry is discipleship ministry. Mm-hmm. You're in there making relationships, discipling people, whether it's through services, Bible studies, or even one-on-one stuff. It's much more long-term. You might see the same guy in your thing for 10 years versus in jail. He might be there for 3 months, and then you don't see him again.
Yeah, 3 days.
So
I don't know the guy who led me to Christ. I never saw him.
Right. Like the Ed Neville who went down for 15 years. He went down to 15 years to Tarrant County. Probably saw the same guy maybe, over a period of 2 years once or twice because he's in and out for tickets or, child support or whatever. But he didn't really do it in any of the prison. But he also did Union Mission Gospel. So that's a great thing, label it crisis ministry. Huh?
He went down to San Francisco.
Yeah, he did went down with us after we got plugged in. But go ahead.
Choose between, we're in Carrollton.
Correct.
The closest facility to us would be Carrollton City Jail and the Dallas County Jail. One is straight down 35, one is 10 minutes from our church.
Correct.
You had to choose between doing something like that and really focusing on the reentry ministry. I can imagine there are a lot of reentry people in Carrollton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. It's probably many, many, many people. Would you, and we're, it's Josh and I are just sort of praying about this, would you lean one way or the other?
I think maybe.
Programs as well as entrepreneurial programs and job training programs right now, and she's actually got a state and senators and everybody helping her get it funded. So Dallas County they would get you in real quick, but your level of involvement's going to be, and time wise, it's going to be a whole lot higher at the county jail because of the revolving door.
So I would say honestly I would do Carrollton because it's 10 minutes and it's closer and it's more community. And that's one of the things also, too, that you run into is what is your focus? Is it more community-related, or is it you want to capture somebody, further down and bring them, it's like further down south, meaning Huntsville, and then bring them back into a stable community? So I would think beginning, it would probably be good to kind of learn the ins and outs, because county jails are so much stricter as far as entry and the allotted time that you have for church, because it's totally different in a county jail.
You may not have church in a county jail. You may just seat for 45 minutes as a volunteer to an open tank.
Mm-hmm.
City jail is going to be the same way. They're going to have a period of time for volunteers to come in, then they're going to tell you to leave. Where the involvement in prison ministry, it's not actually going in, it's all about them coming out. In the city and the county, they're going to revolve